Welcome to Meta Strategy's Forum on World Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Joe Topinka to the broadcast. Joe is the CIO of Red Wing Shoe Company, a privately held, US-based global manufacturer of performance footwear and garments. Joe is also the founder of CIO Mentor, a consultancy focused on helping companies leverage the power of technology to achieve profit-driven business results. Prior to joining Red Wing and to founding CIO Mentor, Joe was Chief Information Officer of RSM McLadry, the fifth largest accounting firm in the US. Joe was responsible for the firm's IT strategy and operations. Joe also served as CIO of BNY Clearing Services, a wholly owned subsidiary of Bank of New York. Joe began his IT career at Metavante, a major financial services and software provider. As a business unit manager, Joe was responsible for developing software solutions for commercial banks. Joe has a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse and completed the Management Development Program at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. I recently caught up with Joe in his office in Red Wing, Minnesota, and our conversation centered mostly on world-class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as Joe spoke about his creative ways of conceptualizing and communicating IT strategy, his approach to R&D, as well as a number of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Joe Topinka, welcome to the Forum on World Class IT.
Thank you, Peter. It's good to be here.
Great. Well, Joe, you are the CIO of Red Wing Shoes, and I wonder for those of our listeners who might not be familiar with Red Wing, could you tell us a bit about the company and your role as CIO?
I'd be glad to. Red Wing Shoe Company has been around since 1905. We've been a premium footwear manufacturer since then. We still manufacture products here in Red Wing, Minnesota. We also are very vertically aligned. We also tan our own leather. And we sell our own products in over 450 retail stores across the U.S. And we also make flame retardant garments. So it's a company that's privately held, has been in the same family almost since the very beginning. And it's in a beautiful little red brick river city about 50 miles southeast of Minneapolis along the Mississippi River. So it's a fun little organization.
That's great. Can you tell us a bit about your role as CIO?
My role, yes. As CIO, I'm actually the first CIO here at Red Wing Shoe Company. In 107 years. I don't know that they had them back then. But I report to the president of the company. IT historically, before I got here 4 years ago, was, you know, considered sort of a hidden away operating group. Sort of, you know, I always like the joke that we are in the basement and, you know, we get requirements through the hatch and the ceiling. But, but you know, my job was really to try to put IT on the roadmap and really connect the capabilities that IT can bring to the table to the organization. So that's been my primary role.
The extent to which you can reflect back to the time where they thought to bring you in, to bring a CIO in, what was the turning point or the tipping point as you understand it?
Well, you know, I think that the company had been on a growth spurt, but wasn't really capitalizing on the opportunities that were in front of them for quite some time. And, you know, I think they had some new blood in the organization, some new management talent on the executive team, where they came from organizations where IT was highly leveraged. And so there were parallels that they were able to bring to the organization, and they pushed the management team to kind of say, look, let's see if we can get that kind of performance out of IT. And that's kind of what happened. And it was interesting when they interviewed me, there were some 65 candidates that they had combed through. And this is Red Wing in a nutshell, but I had been looking for a job, and a friend of mine told me they were, interviewing. And so I cold called the HR department and got to the hiring HR person on the phone. I talked to them for 2 hours, but it was a great conversation. And they really were excited about trying to find somebody who could bring technology into the strategic conversation at the executive team.
That's great. Yeah. And I think it's amazing to think that there was not a CIO, then you came in as CIO. And I know from our past conversations, Joe, that you take IT strategy very seriously. And there are a lot of organizations who had a series of CIOs who find it very difficult, whether it's the CIO who finds it difficult in his or her team or the rest of the organization's engaging of that part of IT in order to mete out a true strategy. I think it's very admirable that this was an organization that wanted that level of strategy and that you were
had the capacity to deliver on it. And I know one of the things that I was very impressed with in learning more about your story is some of the very creative ways you have used to express the strategy of IT to a population that hasn't necessarily thought a lot about what IT can do for this business. Can you talk a bit about some of the methods you've employed?
Sure. You know, I was really fortunate in my past life. I was a product manager trained through the Product Development Management Association. So those skills really taught me how to think more like a business person. That was sort of a turning point in the mid-90s when I was exposed to those programs. At the same time, I was really fortunate to get plugged into user-centered design, user experience design work by some pioneers at Apple Computers that happened to relocate to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I happened to be working for a software company that built solutions for banks. And it was through that experience that I learned about the importance of field research, you know, seeing is believing, getting out on the field. And I have leveraged that skill set just about every company that I've worked for now. This is my third CIO opportunity with a third company. Hopefully, you know, this time I'll get it right. But, but you know, using field research as a tool is really the secret sauce for me, because you really don't know what challenges the marketplace is facing, your sales organizations are facing, your operations group even are facing, unless you're there watching and seeing firsthand. You know, the idea of trying to rely on a focus group to get feedback doesn't really work that well. And so, you know, I have a story that I could tell you if you're interested.
Please, yes.
I was the CIO at a very large accounting firm recently, and they hadn't changed their audit platform in years. So my inclination being a CIO there was to get out in the field, hang around with auditors, and actually engaged in actual audits and in real companies. And we did that for a number of months. We traveled to 20 or 30 cities across the U.S. And what we learned in that process was invaluable. There were things that auditors were doing in the field that they stopped complaining about. They used to bring this old Lotus Notes server with them and have all the auditors hook up to that server. And the server they had was well past its prime. So they would spend 2 to 3 hours a day just rebooting the server and getting reconnected. You know, they used to complain about it. No one responded, and they just said, well, that's the way it is. We'll just live with that. So that type of issue got hidden, and we would never have surfaced it had we not been out on the field. So after we collected all this data, we brought it back to the accounting firm, and there was so much information, including quotes from people. We decided we needed a way to sort of synthesize that information. We did two things. We wrote a what-if document, because people hadn't really thought about the future much, because the past is the past and they were stuck with old technology and they thought they'd be there forever. We thought we'd give them permission to sort of look ahead to the future and ask themselves, what might life be like if we had the tools we needed to serve customers? The organization had high turnover. There were a lot of issues. And what we did is we took that information and we enlisted a company that helped us. They spent about a week with us, and we needed to create a picture that the organization could get their heads wrapped around. And they helped us with a really simple methodology. They told us that if we're going to create a simple placemat picture, a cartoon, if you will, that really depicted the pain out in the field, you've got to be able to show that pain in the picture. And the cartoon that we did, that they put together for us, had a picture of a building with the floors misaligned and chunks falling off. And you had executives not knowing, you know, the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. One office had too few people to do the workload. Another office had too many, and they weren't able to see that. And so we used the picture to kind of show all of that, including people walking out the door with valued assets and information because they were frustrated with the firm. So we were able to tell that story in one side of the picture. In the middle of the picture, we had a roadmap to tomorrow. We had a set of solutions that addressed the themes that we saw. And then on the right-hand side of the picture was sort of the nirvana, the world of tomorrow. And so it gave them a glimpse of what the world might look like, including being able to handle workload and being able to move work across the 130 offices that the company had seamlessly without putting it in a FedEx package. And you had executives sort of their fingers on the pulse of what was happening in the organization. That picture really told the story, and it was a compelling way to get the organization wrapped around their heads wrapped around the solution we were trying to propose. It made it seem real. That story resonated throughout the organization, and it actually created an opportunity for us to do a day in the life conference with our executive team. We had that cartoon picture blown up, and put on at the back of a wall. It's like 15 or 20 feet wide and 6 feet tall, and their eyes were drawn to it. But before we let them get into the picture and look at the quotes that were on the captions on the cartoon, we made them sort of take a look at all of the quotes from the actual employees in the field. That's what really got them. If we hadn't been there in the field to hear it and see it, we wouldn't have understood the emotion that people had. Quotes like, "I felt more like a team when I was in the bottling plant back in Wisconsin," or, "I don't think the management team has the courage to make this decision, to pull the trigger." So many, many quotes like that. It really got our management team's attention. And then when we got through that exercise, we took them to the cartoon picture where we showed them the pain, the roadmap, and then the Nirvana. We really had them. And so we were able to make the pitch, got our money and funding, and then we're off and running on a new platform.
I find that example so fascinating, Joe, that basically you started not necessarily with a technology story, but with the business's story to make it real for them. And then the use of pictures, taking what for many, still today, many business executives find to be such an esoteric topic, technology and IT, but making it real for them, both by expressing opinions about the business, but also by expressing it with visuals that are non-traditional. I really like that depiction.
You know, it worked really well. And the other thing that we did along with that, with the cartoon picture and the what if statements, we actually took 3 or 4 different scenarios that we discovered out in our field research, and we retold those stories, set into the future, made up the names, but included that in our little white paper document, our strategy document. And so they were able to read about, you know, Susie out in the audit, who was wirelessly connected back to the home base and could see people online and engage international tax experts when they needed them. And so that really helped to crystallize the realities that we could actually deliver to them.
That's really fantastic. Speaking of creative communications, you've also developed a series of what I believe you refer to as one-pagers for the ongoing communication of IT initiatives. Can you talk a bit about what it is that you include on that one page and the rationale of making it a single page as opposed to a series of pages?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have an IT governance process here at Redwing. We call it the Business Technology Investment Committee. And, you know, we're not big into process and bureaucracy around here. You know, 107 years, it still kind of has a family spirit. And in that context, what we wanted to do was bring rigor to the process, because in IT, you hear someone from the user community say, "Gee, I've had that request in the system for 5 years. Why haven't you done anything about it?" So we thought, well, let's give them a voice. We have an IT business partner program where we've aligned people with skill sets that I actually send them to the Product Development Management Association to get certified. But we developed a one-page document that really encapsulates justification, really lightweight kinds of things. Does it drive revenue? Does it create efficiencies? Are we responding to a regulatory or compliance-related matter? We just keep it that simple. And then on the forum, we just say, "Hey, tell us a little bit about how this is going to impact you in terms of the benefits. Are there workarounds?" We're not looking for a big book, but just a lightweight, a way to kind of capture the business problem and the benefits that come with it. And then we ask them, and we actually collaborate with them on, what kind of resources might you need? Do you need IT resources? Do you need to do some business process reengineering? And what kind of folks might that be? And so we try to take a crack at that. And then the very bottom of the one pager is a quick summary, you know, kind of encapsulates the total cost that we see and the benefits. And then we use that as a way to, every quarter, we look at those and we say, okay, which of these make the most sense to grab and run with? And the way we do that is we score them. We actually have a scoring process where we take those one pagers and we put them across a matrix where we're looking at the alignment to strategic goals. And we actually sat down with our exec team and had them enumerate and highlight for us what they thought the 3 or 4 or 5 key goals were for the company. And so this is kind of a gut feel thing, but it, you know, if it's a 5, that means it's really aligning, and we talk about how. And then we also look at, does it address an operational pain point? Is it an end-of-life issue for a particular solution? Does it achieve some sort of cost benefit? How achievable is it? And is the project going to be risky? Is it something so brand new that it's likely to have some bumps, or maybe we won't be successful? And then we look at the certainty of the project cost. Is it some brand new solution that there's a plus or minus 30 or 40% on the total cost? So we do that for every one of the one pagers, and we score them. And at the end of the process, we look at the total. We look at all the projects that are on the one pagers, and we rank them based on that total score. And then we map our resources against that list, and then we draw a line. Where the resources stop, we take the list, we drop off the ones that didn't make the cut, and we take that to our BTIC, our Business Technology Investment Committee, and we say, here's what we think. This is what we should do the next quarter. And that process has been up and running for a little over a year, and it's worked phenomenally well. They've not come back and said, gee, I don't like your list. We think the process you use makes sense. We actually show them the results, and that's worked really well for us.
Again, a great example of how you've engaged the rest of the organization in many ways in their terms. So it's very concrete the value they should be getting out of these one pagers, in addition to getting accomplishing your goals as well.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things that when I first got here is that IT is the bottomless pit. You know, where projects go into Never Never Land. And,
right.
And because we have a vibrant and complex supply chain, they all understand planning, sourcing, making, and delivering, the five domains of the supply chain. We actually drew parallels to IT. Our sourcing is people, hardware, software, as an example. Our making is the project execution. So those parallels, sort of light bulbs went on for some members of the team that could say, you're doing what we do when we manufacture footwear, and we're trying to source raw materials, and we're trying to figure out how to get it scheduled in the manufacturing plants. So that's a parallel that we were able to draw, and that worked pretty well to help make our case.
That's wonderful. I know that one of the big initiatives that you're currently undertaking is the first e-commerce solution for the organization, a new point of sale system and so forth. Obviously, these are some significant changes with rather significant technology ramifications to them as well. I have no doubt some of the things you've already described in terms of processes for strategy and for project justification were a big part of communicating that. But can you tell us a bit more about how you kind of dug into these big initiatives and sold them?
Sure. You know, I went right back to my roots and got out in the field. We did a bunch of field research. We spent time with our sales reps. We spent time in our stores watching customers interact. You could see customers on their smartphones looking up shoes on our website and trying to find them on the shelves. And so these are folks that were, you know, already acclimated to the web and actually a mobile commerce. And so as we went through that process, we put together the same sort of what if document and brought that to management and got it sold that way. It was a partnership that I joined forces with our biggest brand group that represents well over 70% of the total revenues of the company. And he and I actually did the board presentation to ask for the funding. And the whole presentation was really not around necessarily generating a lot of new revenue. It was really around delivering a shopping experience that our customers wanted. It was really more about delivering on the brand promise, whether you're online in a store or on one of our mobile stores. So that really was where we headed with that program. And we're in the midst of it right now. And it is a business transformation project for a company that has largely sold products the same way for decades. To introduce e-commerce is a whole new set of skills. And that's pushing the organization and stretching us in ways that I think people are finding a bit surprising. And, you know, I used to have to tell people that just this e-commerce thing isn't just about putting a shopping cart on a website. It's a lot more than that. Yeah, we have 450 retail stores across the U.S., and we're very, very concerned about making sure that our dealer partners are kept whole in the process, the whole issue of channel conflict. And we've ironed out some ideas and concepts that we've shared with them along the way. Those are not issues that are really IT-related, but it's part of the whole program. And we're stretching internally. We're trying to think about how can we fulfill orders the way a consumer wants us to. You know, Zappos and Amazon have already got everyone thinking it just takes a day to get it shipped. You know, in our B2B world, we're not too bad, but we're not that fast. And then tracking the orders and giving the consumer access to their FedEx tracking number or UPS tracking number, those are not things we have to do in our wholesale world. So just a whole myriad of things that are now coming into the fore that wouldn't have been there had we stayed just in our traditional distribution model.
And I know this dovetails nicely to the next topic that I wanted to raise with you, Joe, which is the whole notion of R&D. And I know from an IT perspective, R&D is something that's near and dear to your heart and something that you've wanted to make sure was imbued in your IT disciplines and something that your organization was delivering upon. Can you explain kind of some of the ways in which you've gone about R&D?
Yeah, I have this little acronym that I use. It's more amusing than it is anything else. I call it rip off and duplicate R&D. And you know, the whole idea behind that is it's fairly simple. I once heard somebody very smart say there aren't any new ideas, and that's probably true. But I really think though that listening to what other companies have done and learning from their mistakes, that's what I call R&D. And to the extent that you can leverage ideas from others and make them pragmatic and practical in your own organization, really, I think is important. And I encourage my teams to get out and connect in the marketplace. I'm one of those Uber connectors on LinkedIn. I don't know that I have more than, I don't have thousands of connections, so I'm not that crazy. But I do like to get out and talk to people, meet people. Actually, that's where you and I met, networking. And I think you learn a lot from others. And it's amazing to me to find how many people out there that are willing to share their story. So, you know, I learned from others. And, I, you know, to me, it's just part of the giving back program that we as IT professionals need to remember. So, you know, knowledge is power. If you're willing to share it, it helps lift the whole profession, I think. So that's what I mean by R&D.
Excellent. That makes sense. I wanted to also ask you, just thinking more broadly about IT trends, as you look out into the future, what are some trends that particularly excite you from an IT perspective?
Some of the things that probably excite a lot of folks, the cloud-based revolution is here. And for me, it's not so much in where the servers are running. It's more what solutions are available now in the cloud where maybe I don't have to worry about standing up a server or configuring solutions and networks in our data center. So there's just more and more available. And, you know, you've got companies like Salesforce.com that sell directly to the business, skipping IT. So there are some nuances and challenges surrounding that that are presenting some opportunities within IT. So I see that as sort of something that we'll continue to have to deal with. And I think that's a positive thing overall because, you know, at the end of the day, if Salesforce is selling directly to business users, that's not bad. It's just that you have to remember there are real requirements that have to get baked into those platforms and integrations that have to happen and security that has to get packaged. So it actually, it's highlighting those things more now than ever before. And I would say the other big thing that I'm concerned about, not in a bad way, but just this whole idea of big data. How does a retailer like us take advantage of it? Some of the more sophisticated retailers out there like Amazon have really dialed in on that expertise. You know, a company like Red Wing, we're not able to do what they do, but we can watch and mimic. And so we're trying to learn from that, especially when we get to e-commerce, when people are on our sites, what are they hovering on? What pages do they abandon? Why do they leave the shopping cart? How do we connect social media and understand those trends as well, all part of the whole big data scheme? And so that's something I think that, you know, right now it's kind of a competitive advantage. At some point in the future, it'll be more commodity. But I think right now we're in that sort of in-between space, and we're struggling with just how fast can we start to leverage all of that, that whole soup of information, and actually deliver it back in a way that we can actually do something about it or take some proactive action.
On the big data side, what's your vision for IT's role in that? I mean, certainly I would imagine it's owning and maintaining some of the technologies that are used for that. To what extent do you see IT's role as the interpreter of the data that flows through those systems?
You know, I think that's you know, a really good question. I think that from our perspective, what we're trying to do is create a suite of tools that can actually be leveraged by our analysts. I suppose it could be IT folks that are helping to do the analytics, but I think it's probably better served within the business. I was talking to a very large, multi-billion-dollar chemical company yesterday, as a matter of fact, and we were asking questions around their demand planning. And they have a whole suite of analysts that really, they mine the bones. You know, that's a phrase that I've used in the past. They're really looking for unique trends that give them some insights into how they manage their inventory and how they deliver product. And I think that's a good model to follow with big data. I think folks that are closest to that aspect of the business will know more what to look for. We in IT can provide the tool set and work collaboratively with them, but I think it's better served, you know, directly in the business. At least that's my impression right now.
Well, Joe Topinka, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives. It's always energizing to speak with a leader who runs IT like a business and thinks so empathetically with his or her colleagues about the needs that they have and can so clearly crystallize and communicate the plans that you and your team have to move this business forward. So thank you so much for sharing your insight.
My pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to your new book.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Joe.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Many of Red Hat's global customers are experiencing the explosive growth of big, semi-structured or unstructured data. Are you? Visit redhat.com/liberate to learn how Red Hat is helping liberate their customers' data with innovative open source software solutions for scale-out network attached storage. We'll be right back. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Cool, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.